Boker Tov. First of all, I have a sponsoring announcement. This morning's shiur is being sponsored by Shimshon Greinich in loving memory of his mother, Sarah Rivka Bat Simcha, Zichrona Livracha. The yard site is Yud Gimel Tammuz, which happens to be today. And the learning will be in her memory. This coming Thursday, as you know, is the beginning of the three-week period, the what's known as Bein HaMitzarim, based on a pasuk in Megillat Eicha. It ordains basically three special haftarot, which means that in lieu of what might be considered the haftara matching or somehow resembling aspects of the Parashat HaShavua, we now, for the next 10 weeks, 3 weeks before Tisha B'Av, and then 7 weeks from Tisha B'Av until Rosh Hashanah, digress from the normal thematic haftarah relating to the parsha, but it becomes seasonal. And the three haftarot between Shivasar Tammuz and Tisha B'Av deal with Puranut, affliction, and the seven haftarot between Tisha B'Av and Rosh Hashanah deal with Nechama, consolation. And all this is in preparation for entering into Rosh Hashanah. And the Haftarah for this coming week, well, it's not on the source page, but I'm going to lift out of context a particular line, is the initiation of Yirmiyahu to the service of God as a prophet. And Kadosh Baruch Hu gives him the mandate in the very, very first parak of Yirmiyahu. I'll read and translate. Re'ei hifkadetich ha-hayom azeh ala goyim bala mamlachot. I have appointed you to say something about the nations and the monarchies, the kingdoms. Lintosh v'lintotz u'lehavid v'leharos. These are four expressions of destruction. And then two expressions of rebuilding, livnot v'lintoa, which means that from the six expressions of mandate, two-thirds are puranut, are affliction. And this is what led Chazal to teach us that the bulk of the book of Yirmiyahu is a book of puranut, of affliction. But even within the context of affliction, there are some very, very beautiful and even famous psukim that relate to a rebuilding and consolation and so, and geula and redemption. So there's also livnot velintoa. And the first prophecies that Yirmiyahu receives is actually a double-edged prophecy. He sees an arm and stick. Makel shaked aniro e. I see an arm and stick. He doesn't understand what the nature of the message is. And a Kadosh Baruch Hu explained to him that I'm going to show you something. And you saw well, yes, I showed you an almond stick. And almonds, they somehow ripen very, very quickly. And what I'm going to tell you is not something that's going to happen in 1,000 years or in 2,000 years, but it's going to happen shortly. It's around the corner. And the second message is, Ma ata ro'eh, what do you see? Sir nafuach ani ro'eh, I see a bubbling over a pot, and its spout, its panav, is facing north. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Mitzafon tipatach hara'ah al kol yoshvei ha'aretz. The troubles are going to begin from the north. Now we have to realize that Babylon, Babel, is east of Eretz Yisrael, except that the travel routes were not from Babel, which is modern-day Iraq, over what might be considered today modern-day country of Jordan. These are desert areas, and basically people, the travel routes did not go through this area. The travel routes went through Syria. And in Syria, you had the various pathways, and they may have been roundabout a little bit, what we call like a snake path. And that's why the area of the north of the by the Golan is known as the Bashan. And Bashan is actually related to the python snake, where Bet Shin Nun translates to Pei Taf Nun. So you have here the Piton, the python snake. And the snake path was actually the pathway that brought the travelers past various oases of water. And that was the travel route that the Babylonians would take upon entering into Eretz Israel. So therefore, the enemy would arrive from the north. Mitzafon tipatach hara'a. From the north, would the troubles would begin. This is the Haftara, and this is our initiation into the 3 weeks. Now, we say the 3 weeks because we assume that Shivasar B'Tammuz begins the 3 weeks. And what exactly happened on Shivasar B'Tammuz? So we know that the Mishnah tells us, and those who happen to have the source pages on multiple reflections upon Fast of Tammuz, in source number 4, the Mishnah tells us that five items are enumerated as to what occurred on the 17th of Tammuz, and five with Tisha B'Av, but we're not going to deal with Tisha B'Av now. So what happens on the Shivasar Tammuz? One is the shattering of the Luchot in days of Moshe Rabbeinu. The second is the Butala Tamid, the daily sacrifice of Beit HaMikdash came to an end several weeks before the destruction of Beit HaMikdash. The third is the crashing of the walls of Yerushalayim as the enemy was going to destroy Yerushalayim. The fourth is an unknown episode of burning of Sefer Torah, Sarah Afustamus et HaTorah. Fustamus is clearly a Roman name, and the Gemara tells us we don't have the details exactly when and how this happened, but it was marked on the 17th of Tammuz. And the fifth one is Hamid Tzelem Beheichal, a statue was put up in the Beit HaMikdash. Also, the Gemara says we don't have the exact details of the history of what this was all about, but there is such a tradition, and we have the five sources. According to this Mishnah, the sources seem to be chronological, beginning with Moshe Rabbeinu in the desert, moving to the end of Bayit Rishon, and Bayit Sheni, the burning of Yerushalayim, the crashing of the walls of Yerushalayim, and then those two episodes of the burning of Sefer Torah and the putting up of the Tzelem of the Heichal. These are Beit HaMikdash, Bayit Sheni episodes for sure, and that's what the Mishnah tells us. Now, to us it's axiomatic that this whole process begins on the 17th of Tammuz. Yet when the Navi Zechariah, who lives between the first and the second Beit HaMikdash, is asked a question, a halachic question. It's almost a, for the world of Shelot to Tshuvot. He's asked a very, very simple question. Now that the Beit HaMikdash has been destroyed, do we continue? So we know we have the fast days in commemoration of the Beit HaMikdash being destroyed. The fast of Tevet, the fast of Tammuz, the fast of Tzom Gedalia, and the fast of Tisha B'Av, of course. So that we all understand. We have the four fast days. But now in the days of Zechariah, they're building the second Beit HaMikdash. So what exactly remains from the fast days? Or putting it in Zechariah's words, Ha'ifkeh etzom ha'chamishi. Do I continue to weep in the fast of the fifth month, which is the month of Av, Tisha B'Av? Do we continue with Tisha B'Av now that we're building the second Beit HaMikdash? And there's a beautiful response where he says in source number 1, Ko'ama Hashem Tzfa'ot, God says, Tzom ha-revi'i v'tzom ha-chamishi v'tzom ha-shvi'i v'tzom ha-asiri yeh le-beit Yehuda le-sason u-simcha u-le-mo'adim tovim v'ayemet v'ashalom mehavu. The fast of the fourth month, the fast of the fifth month, the fast of the seventh month, the fast of the tenth month. And they are Tammuz, Av, Tishrei, which is Tzom Gedalia, and Tevet, will become for Beit Yehuda days of Yamim Tovim, great joy and Simcha. It's a beautiful answer, except that one little small detail seems to be conspicuously absent. Exactly when is this supposed to happen? Is Zechariah saying that now that we're building the second Beit HaMikdash, all of the fast days are being abolished and we will on their ashes, if you may, we're now going to construct Chagim, Yamim Tovim? Or is Zechariah talking about something that has something to do with much, much later in the history of Am Yisrael in Messianic days in Yamot HaMashiach? It's unclear. It's unclear from the Pasuk. Furthermore, in Yirmiyahu Perek Nunbet, the very last chapter of the book of Yirmiyahu, we are told that the Babylonians crashed through the walls of Yerushalayim not on the 17th of Tammuz, but several days before, on the 9th of Tammuz. And that's what the Pasuk reads, Bachodesh HaRavi'i, in the fourth month, B'tish'a LaChodesh, on the 9th of the month, Vayechazak HaRa'av, Ba'il, the famine was very, very strong, Lo haya lechem alam ha'aretz, Batibaka ha'ir, and the walls split, which means they were crashed through. So here we have a report in Yirmiyahu that the crashing of the walls of Yerushalayim by the Babylonians, leading to the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, was done on the 9th of Tammuz, not on the 17th of Tammuz. Yet, the Mishnah tells us that on the 17th of Tammuz, the walls were crashed. So in source number 5, the Gemara raises this question. Hufka ha'ir b'shivasar havi? Were the walls crashed on the 17th? V'aktiv, but you have a pasuk in Yirmiyahu that says, b'chodesh ha'revi'i b'tish'a l'chodesh. It was on the 9th of the month of Tammuz, bati baka ha'ir, that the walls were crashed through. So the Gemara says, Amar Rava. Rava gives an answer. Lo kasha, no problem. Kan barishona, kan bashniya. Yirmiyahu was talking about the Babylonians leading to the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. There, the walls were crashed on the 9th of Tammuz. Whereas the Mishnah is talking about the crashing of the walls of Yerushalayim leading to the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash in the days of the Romans. And that took place on the 17th of Tammuz. So here what the Gemara does is, we had a contradiction of sorts between the tradition of the Mishnah and the Pasuk, and we've resolved it. We have two destructions. One took place, the crashing of the walls took place on the 9th, and the other, the crashing of the walls took place on the 17th. Now, we know that the four fast days for the destruction of Beit HaMikdash were already in place after the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, because Zechariah is telling us that the Tzoma Revi'i and Tzoma Chamishi and Tzoma Shvi'i and Tzoma Asiri Yele Beit Yudada Sosoma Simcha, that the fast of the fourth month Tammuz, the fast of the fifth month Av, the fast of the seventh month Tishrei Tzom Gedalia, and the fast of the 10th month Teveit will become Yamim Tovim, which means at the moment, all of these four target dates in these 4 months are fast days. So there was a Tzom HaRavi'i, there was a fast day of in Tammuz, but the Navi Zechariah never told us the specific day. So what was it? Was it the 17th? Or was it perhaps the 9th of Tammuz? And only after the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash did we move over to fasting the Tzom HaRevi'i in the 17th of the month. And this issue is actually brought up by the Tosfot on Masechet Rosh Hashanah. See, the Gemara tells us in Masechet Rosh Hashanah something fascinating. I'll go back to source number 3. The Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says, there are 4 matters which Rabbi Akiva explained, and I, myself, Rabbi Shimon, I have different opinions. The Gemara, although introduces this by saying there are 4 matters, but on the local level deals with only 1 matter, and the matter which is relevant to a discussion that has to do with Asara B'Teveit. It's not even our discussion. But it opens up with the Tzom HaRevi'i, in source number 3, Tzom HaRevi'i, the pass of the fourth month, Ze Tish'a B'Tammuz Shebo Hufka'ir. The date is the 9th of Tammuz, which means what the Gemara is doing here is explaining the phrase in Tanakh, in Sefer Zechariah. When Zechariah said Tzom HaRevi'i, which date did he have in mind? He had in mind the 9th of Tammuz. And this is what he said, that is the 9th of Tammuz. On this particular Gemara, there is a variant tradition found in the Talmud Yerushalmi. And we have the Talmud Bavli, Talmud Yerushalmi, and many times we have variant traditions. And in the Talmud Yerushalmi, it says that not only did the Romans crash through the walls of Yerushalayim on the 17th of Tammuz, leading to the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, but the Babylonians also crashed through the walls of Yerushalayim on the 17th of Tammuz, leading to the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, which is very nice tradition. Except there's only one problem. In Sefer Yirmiyahu, it specifically said that the Babylonians crashed through on the 9th of Tammuz. So how could you have an oral tradition that the Babylonians crashed through on the 17th when the Tanakh tells us clearly in Yirmiyahu Perek Nun Bet that all this took place on the 9th of Tammuz? And the Talmud Yerushalmi answers this question with an absolutely remarkable statement that, in fact, the Babylonians crashed through the walls of both, in both eras, the Babylonians and then the Romans, in both eras on the 17th, on the exact same day. But why did Yirmiyahu write the 9th of Tammuz? Says the Talmud Yerushalmi, this was a deliberate distortion by Yirmiyahu because of kilkul cheshbonot. Kilkul cheshbonot means the situation was so desperate in the siege of Yerushalayim that people actually lost touch with the calendar dates. They grew insensitive to time. Now, you may think this is the really way out. How can human beings become so insensitive to time that they mistake the difference between the 17th of a month and the 9th of the month? And this can only happen is if for some time they've actually lost contact with the calendar in general. And you don't have to go all that far back in history to see that this is plausible. One of my trips to Poland with my yeshiva in Chashmonaim, we met up on a Motzei Shabbat with a Holocaust survivor, not a young woman from Kibbutz Yavna. Her name is Sarah Tesler. And Sarah Tesler spoke to our 12th graders. And this Sarah Tesler is a very small, short woman, but she had quite a story to tell. That when she was a 17-year-old in Auschwitz, so she said clearly that there was no concept of time any longer. There was no such thing as they knew when was Shabbat or any other Chag for that matter, because every day was the same thing. It was just a routine and so on. Women had no contact with the men's side, as you know, those are familiar with the camps. But when they would be walking out to hard labor in the quarries, wherever they were working, sometimes they would pass a point in the fence where the men would be walking as well on the other side. And there was this opportunity to yell out a name that perhaps somebody on the other side would have some information. And this was the only contact the men and the women had with each other to get some type of information about whether someone is still alive or not. And they would scream out a name like, you know, Moshe Schwartz, and somebody would say, he's no longer with us, or something of that nature. At one occasion, Sarah Tesler says that the men yelled out to the women, one man yelled out to the women, that tomorrow is Yom Kippur. And Sarah Tesler said that nobody had any idea when Rosh Hashanah was. And here they're being told that tomorrow is Yom Kippur. And she said to herself, how many people in Auschwitz are going to fast on Yom Kippur? I mean, obviously the situation was such that every morsel of food that would be given to them could give them another days of life. And they were given subhuman rations. We know you need about 1,200 calories a day to survive. They were given about 450 calories a day of food to survive, and they hardly survived. Most people actually perished from famine. And therefore, if they would ask a Shaila, what about Yom Kippur? Every Rav in the book would have said they should eat and so on. But Sarah Tesler said, you know what? She's still strong enough and she's going to go on the day and fast. And she does. She fasts. And when they're coming back from the hard labor, they pass the men's line is there as well. And man yells out and said, we made a mistake. Today wasn't Yom Kippur. Tomorrow's Yom Kippur. We made a miscalculation. So Sarah Tesler is finishing the day fasting, and she says, all right, you know, well, she still has some koyach left, so she'll continue to fast and see how long she can make it. And she goes on and fasts a second day in a row in these conditions of Auschwitz. And then when they get back at the end of the day and they're passing the men on the other side, someone yells out, "We really made another mistake. Today for sure wasn't Yom Kippur. Either yesterday was Yom Kippur or tomorrow is going to be Yom Kippur." And Tzara Tesla looks up to Kadosh Baruch Hu and says, "I don't know which day is Yom Kippur, but whatever it was, Kadosh Baruch Hu should accept my 2 days of fasting as if it was Yom Kippur." And you realize what kind of great Mesirat Nefesh, what heroic act that was. But I'm bringing this to our attention today, that it is possible, Kilkula Cheshbonot, that they had no clue as to what the date was. And Yirmiyahu wanted to document for posterity how severe the situation was. So while the oral tradition continued that the Babylonians crashed through the walls of Yerushalayim on the 17th of Tammuz, he deliberately wrote down in his book the wrong date. So you have now a dispute between the Babli and the Yerushalmi, the two Talmuds, whether the Tzom HaRavi'i, the fast of the fourth month, is the 9th or the 17th. We have a piece of Slichot that will be said this coming Thursday in Ashkenazi circles. And it may have come through the source pages too, with those of you who have it. I'm going to read the first line and translate it, and you'll see which side the author, who's Shlomo Ibn Gabirol. I know some of us think that Ruchov Ibn Gabirol is a street in Yerushalayim or Tel Aviv, but he was a great Spanish poet of the 11th century, and he wrote as follows: She'ein esar ashen nimsar biyad bavel v'gam seir lecha yehme ze kame v'yitchanen kiben seir yom gavar ha'oyev v'tibaka ha'ir. First, I'll translate the chorus refrain: the day when the enemy prevailed and the city was breached. Yom gavar ha'oyev v'tibaka ha'ir. This phrase is going to repeat itself after every single stanza. But the opening stanza tells us that we ask a Kadosh Baruch Hu to give attention to the captives. Who the captives? We Am Yisrael, we're the captives, who were delivered into the hands of Bavel and Seir. Seir is a nickname of Esav, and the nickname of Esav is Edom. And Edom was always referred to as Rome. And hence what Ibn Gabirol is poetically saying, that something happened twice. Yom Gavar Ha'aviyeh Vatibaka Ha'ir, that the city walls were breached, once in the hands of the Babylonians and once in the hands of the Romans. Which means Shlomo Ibn Gabirol has taken a stand that the Yerushalmi version is the correct version, and that is that on the 17th of Tammuz, we commemorate not only the crashing of the walls by the Romans leading to the second destruction, but also the crashing of the walls by the Babylonians leading to the first destruction. Yad Bavel v'gam Seir. And we're going to get back to this poem soon to see that Shlomo Ibn Gabirol has got his eye on the Talmud Yerushalmi traditions. But just to complicate matters, where do we stand, let's say, halachically? And how do we understand the pasuk from Zechariah of the Tzom HaRavi'i? So we say, well, there's a dispute. The Talmud Bavli says one thing, and the Talmud Yerushalmi says something else. Well, the question is, so if according to the Talmud Bavli, the 9th of Tammuz is the day that the Babylonians crashed through Yerushalayim, and after the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, the Tzom HaRavi'i, the fast of Tammuz, was the 9th, not the 17th. So how come we didn't continue the fasting of the 9th of Tammuz until this very day? So it was read in Mishnah Berurah, and source number 9 tells us that that's already too much to ask of the Tzibur. We already have the 9th of Av, we already have the 17th of Tammuz, and now you want to add also the 9th of Tammuz. So that's, in Hebrew we say it's mugzam. That's a little bit too much. It's exaggerated. And the Chachamim just let us off the hook. But it goes a little bit beyond that. We today are suffering directly from the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash and only indirectly from the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. And hence, if we had to choose which of the target dates in Tammuz we would pick for as to fast one of them, we opted for the 17th of Tammuz, the day the Romans crashed through the walls, as opposed to the 9th of Tammuz, the day that the Babylonians crashed through the walls. But now if I look at the source number 10, which I'm carrying here as the second page, we have the Rambam giving us in his Mishnah commentary the interpretation of the Pasuk of Zechariah. And at the end of the source number 10, the Rambam tells us, Tzom HaRevi'i, Hu Shivasar B'Tammuz, Lefi Shatammuz Hu Chodesh HaRevi'i. He's defining the Pasuk Tzom HaRevi'i of Zechariah. You know what Zechariah was talking about when he meant the fast of the fourth month? He meant the 17th of Tammuz. This is an indication that maybe the Rambam had the identical tradition as Ibn Gabirol in adopting the Talmud Yerushalmi position that the Babylonians also crashed through the walls on the 17th and not on the 9th, which we can live with because the Rambam many times adopts Yerushalmi positions, and that's not, you know, a big issue. The only problem is the Rambam restates this in source number 11 in his Mishneh Torah. And he writes as follows. He tells us exactly the dates and the occurrences of the four fast days. Ve'eluhen, here are the four fast days. Yom Shlishi B'Tishrei, the third of Tishrei, Shebo Ne'erag Gedalia Ben Achikam, the day Gedalia was assassinated, Ve'nichbeit Gachelet Yisrael Hanishara, and the remnant of Am Yisrael was already extinguished, and that's what brought about ultimately the galut. In other words, the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash did not drive most of Am Yisrael out of Eretz Yisrael. There was more than a garrison of Jews remaining, and the Babylonians appointed a Jewish governor by the name of Gedaliah ben Achikam, but he was assassinated 2 months later, and then everything fell apart. So it is to that end that the Yishuv, the settlement of Eretz Yisrael, comes to an end, and that's why Tzom Gedaliah is a fast day. And then he says, Vasiri b'Tevet, the 10th of Tevet, Shavo Samach Melech Bavel B'Vuchadnetzar Rashal Yerushalayim, Ve'viya B'Matzor B'Matzor. What happened on the 10th of Tevet? That's an occurrence of 2.5 years before the destruction, when the Babylonians lay siege around Yerushalayim. So it was the beginning of the end. It took 2.5 years to play itself out, but it was already the beginning of the end. Now what happens on Shivasar B'Tammuz, says the Rambam? Five things. One, and he's quoting the Mishnah, but he's adding certain pieces of information that does not you're not finding in the Mishnah. Nishtabu aluchot, the Moshe Rabbeinu shatters the luchot. Butal hatamid mibayit rishon, the daily sacrificial activity comes to an end in the first Beit HaMikdash era. The hufka Yerushalayim b'churban sheni, and the walls of Yerushalayim were crashed through, leading to the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. And then he mentions tangentially the Afustamus burning of the Torah and placing of the statue in the Beit HaMikdash, but that's not our concern right now. When the Rambam says, B'hufka Yerushalayim B'churban Sheni, so he's not that the walls were crashed through in the second Beit HaMikdash. Why is he saying B'churban Sheni? Because in the Churban Rishon, the Babylonians did not crash the walls on the 17th. But they crashed the walls on the 9th. And this is explained by some of the commentators of the Rambam in source number 13, the author of the Lecha Mishnah. And he says, V'hufka Yerushalayim b'churban bayit sheni, even though, afagav, the Tanit Tikra, the fast day of the Pasuk in Zechariah, Tzom HaRevi'i, lo havi ela b'tet, was only on the 9th, v'shum d'hufka ir b'tet, because the walls were crashed through on the 9th of Tammuz, as it says, spelled out in Yirmiyahu, Mikol Makom, nevertheless, Hashta, today, Avdina Leb Yud Zayin, we fast on the 17th, Ipnei Shechurban Bayit Sheni Chamir. We suffer directly from the second Beit HaMikdash, And therefore, it's more relevant for us, the Hufgah Ir B'Yud Zayin, in the second Beit HaMikdash, the walls were crashed through on the 17th. So what you're looking at here is a big, very big problem. While on the one hand, the Rambam defines the Pasuk in Zechariah, Tzomer V'I, as being the 17th of Tammuz, he does not say that on the 17th of Tammuz, the Babylonians crashed through Yerushalayim. So exactly what happened on the 9th or the 17th of your Tammuz, according to the Rambam? And the answer is very simple. And we can get a glimpse from a section of the Slichot that will be said on Monday, but it's not in the source pages. The first poem that is said for Slichot in Ashkenazi ritual, for Shabbat Tammuz, has a refrain, but it's not the same refrain. The refrain begins with Ki b'Shabbasar b'Tammuz, because on Shabbasar b'Tammuz, such and such happened. So you have, I'll read just the first one just to get an idea of the poetry. Atanu lecha yotzer ruchot, v'rov avoneinu kavdu anachot, gzerot atzmu v'rabu tzrichot, ki b'Shabbasar b'Tammuz, nishtabru haluchot. Because on the 17th of Tammuz, the luchot of Moshe were shattered. And I'll read the next one, you'll get an idea. Galinu mi beit abchira, v'choshcha ba'adeinu ora, dineinu nechtam v'nigzera gzera, ki b'shivasar b'tamuz, nisrifa ha-Torah. So each stanza ends with, ki b'shivasar b'tamuz, for on the 17th of Tammuz, the following happened. Now the author has the Mishnah in mind, that there are five occurrences that took place on the Shivasar b'Tammuz. So the Mishnah gives it to us in chronological order. Moshe Rabbeinu shatters the Luchot, and then the Butal HaTamid, the daily sacrifices of Yerushalayim, came to an end, and then the crashing of the walls, and then the burning of the Sefer Torah, and the putting up of a Tzelem, a statue in the Beit HaMikdash. There seemed to be some chronology there. Whereas in this particular poem, while in the first stanza, the occurrence that comes first to mind is number one in the Mishnah, the shattering of the Luchot, ki b'shivasar b'tammuz nishtabru haluchot. The second stanza, the author jumps to the fourth occurrence. If we would number the occurrences in the Mishnah as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the Luchot, the Korban Tamid, the sacrifices, 3, the crashing of the walls, 4, the burning of Sefer Torah, 5, the statue, so it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Here, the author has 1, 4. He jumps to the fourth one. And on the next line, he says, that's number 5. So now, in his first 3 stanzas, he's captured occurrences 1, 4, and 5. And then he goes on, and he takes it backtracks. He says, Zerunu me'ir el'ir, v'nilkad menu tzera v'tzair, chorva irenu ve'esh bahiv'ir, ki b'shivasar b'tamuz, nifka'a ha'ir. Nifka'a ha'ir. 1 second, that's number 3 on the list in the Mishnah. So what does he have now? In the order of 1, 4, 5, and 3. Very, very odd. Very odd. So what's left? What's left is number 2. Number 2 was the Korban, the Butal HaTamid. And here, the author of this piyut is now going to amplify that second item of Butal HaTamid by suggesting the following. Do not think for a moment that the Korban Tamid of the morning and the Korban Tamid of the afternoon stopped taking place. But other Korbanot, there was still activity going on. If somebody wanted to bring a Korban Chatat for sin, if somebody wanted to bring a Korban Shlomim for whatever reason, or Korban Todah, or Korban Yoledet, what the author wants to bring to our attention is that when the Mishnah says Butal HaTamid, it's not only the daily sacrifices, but there was a total cessation of sacrificial activity. And how does he get that message across? So I'm going to continue with stanza number 5. After he's done 4 stanzas, according to the order of the Mishnah, 1, 4, 5, and 3, now is going to deal with number two. And number two is, Ki b'shevasar b'tamuz butal hatamid. Okay, so now he's back to number two, but he's not through. Stanza number six. Kala mimenu hod bas shevach, charbo shalaf oyev aleinu lazavach, liyot olelim v'yonkim muchanim latavach, ki b'shevasar b'tamuz niftilu ola v'zavach. Korban ola and korban shlamim were also abolished. Don't think for a moment that when it says in number two, butal hatamid, the daily morning and afternoon sacrifices were abandoned, but other sacrifices perhaps went on as usual. Not so. The korban ola that was brought, the korban shlamim, which could be a korban todah, was also. And we're not through. Now he's up to stanza number seven. Maradnu l'shochein me'onot, l'chein nitpazarnu b'chol pinot, Nepach mecholenu likinot, ki b'shevasar b'tamuz, gormu lanu avonot. Because on Shevasar b'tamuz, we were caused to have sins. Why were we caused to have sins? Because there was an abandonment of the korban chatat and asham. And without the korban, the sin remained. Gormu lanu avonot. So now in three stanzas, he's basically said, not only butala tamid, the daily sacrifice, but also the korbanot olah, the korbanot shlamim, and the korbanot chataot v'ashamot, and he's not through yet. He goes on to another stanza. Saravnu lefanecha meriv lishanot, lachein lamdu lishonenu lomar kinot, avonenu b'li lehimanot, ki b'shevasar b'tamuz, just in case you didn't get the point yet, niftilu hakorbanot, all of the sacrifices were abandoned. So the author here in this poem spends four stanzas, after he's already used four stanzas to delineate four of the five items mentioned in the Mishnah, according to the, not the order of the Mishnah, but one, four, five, and three, gets back to number two and repeats two four times over in different versions. Butal atamid, butal ola vazavach, Gormulano avonot, which means the korbanot chatat remain, and niftilu hakorbanot. Any type of korban that you might think of, perhaps the nidarim and nidavot, optional korbanot, nothing was brought, which means the Beit HaMikdash activity ceased to continue 3 weeks before the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. And basically, what the Rambam believes is that at the Churban Bayit Rishon, the Chachamim never made a fast day for the event of the crashing of the walls through Yerushalayim. Yirmiyahu got it right. The Rambam takes the position of the Talmud Bavli that when Zechariah said, I'm sorry, got it right, that when Yirmiyahu said that the walls were crashed through on the 9th of Tammuz, it's exactly when it happened. But when Zechariah said Tzom HaRevi'i, he never meant the 9th of Tammuz. He always meant the 17th of Tammuz. Because the fast of the month of Tammuz in the first Beit HaMikdash never commemorated the crashing of the walls by the Babylonians. But it commemorated the collapse of the sacrificial activity in Beit HaMikdash. And that's what the Rambam means. And therefore, he does not take the Yerushalmi stance of defining the Tzom HaRevi'i as being the day that the Babylonians crashed through the wall, and you have to then adopt the concept of Kilkula Cheshbonot. You don't have to go there. You can accept the fact that Tzom HaRevi'i means the 17th of Tammuz, but has nothing to do with the crashing of the walls of Yerushalayim, but it has to do with the fact that Beit HaMikdash activity ceased to exist. And in the first poem that I read right now, Atanu L'cha Yotzer Ruchot, we get a very clear understanding of the position of Shevasar b'Tammuz as the day of Butal HaTamid, V'Olot, V'Hazvachim, V'Chataot, V'Hashamot, V'Chol HaKorbanot, and all the Korbanot. And that's really the Rambam's position. But if we go back now to Ibn Gabirol's poem. So we mentioned that He starts out by telling us that Yom Gavar Ha'oyev Vatibaka Ha'ir, the day that the walls were crashed, took place on the 17th of Tammuz, twice in our history, Yad Bavel V'gam Seir, by the Babylonians and by the Romans. And this was very much against the position of the Talmud Bavli, but he's got the Yerushalmi on his side here. The very last stanza of this poem is also very instructive, because at the end, it's a turnaround. And even in the first poem, there was a turnaround. Because what happens after Ki b'shevasar b'tamuz niftalu ha-korbanot, you have another three stanzas, and it reflects the end of the pasuk of Zechariah. The pasuk was the Tzomer Ravi, Tzomer Chamishi, Tzomer Shvi, Tzomer Asiri, Yeh lebeit Yehuda ulesason lesimcha. They will become one day Chagim and Yemei Simcha, and the poet will then continue with words of consolation, v'shivasar b'tamuz hafoch lanu l'sason u'simcha, and the next stanza, v'shivasar b'tamuz hafoch lanu l'simcha v'sason, it's playing on the words here, and at the very end, I'll even read the whole section, she'e eleinu shochein ruma, kabetz nefutzoteinu me'arba pinot adama, tomar l'tzion kuma v'nakuma, v'shivasar b'tamuz hafoch lanu l'yom yeshua v'nechama. So you have three stanzas of consolation at the end of this particular poem of the Slichot. So too, Ibn Gabirol, he's asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to change the course of history and have us regain title to Eretz Yisrael and the rebuilding of Beit HaMikdash. And he says it as follows. B'nei Beit Zvul. Beit Zvul is a nickname of Beit HaMikdash. B'nei Beit Zvul. To rebuild that sanctuary. V'hashev gvul, and he should restore the border. Now, why is that important? Because you cannot have Beit HaMikdash in a vacuum. Beit HaMikdash can only be built when there's already a populated Am Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, as a prerequisite for B'nai Beit Zvul, you're going to have V'hashev gvul. The boundaries of Eretz Yisrael are going to have to be restored. So he gives two markers, geographic markers, as to the boundaries, HaKarmel v'HaBashan. And that's very interesting, because as I mentioned earlier, the Bashan was precisely where the Babylonians entered Eretz Yisrael from the north, from the Syrian area, Mitzafon Tipatach Hara'ah, as we will read this coming Shabbat in the Haftarah. And that was the Ezor, the area of Bashan, which, as I mentioned, and I'll repeat it again, that Bashan in the Semitic languages, the bet and the pay interchange, and the shin and taf interchange. That's why the word tlat is shalosh in Aramaic, and so on. And tamnun is octopus, which is shmona. Tamnaya is shmona, with the taf and the shin interchange. So these bet and pay, you even hear it by listening to Arab speaking, the bet and the pay are interchangeable. We know that. So the Bashan is basically Pei Taf Nun, and Pei Taf Nun is a snake, a python snake, and it's basically the snake path of the travel route in the northeast part of Eretz Yisrael, which means this was the border of Eretz Yisrael in the northeast when the Babylonians crashed through, and the Carmel is Haifa, Akko, the port cities. This became actually the headquarters of the Romans, and Akko was a port, Caesarea, Caesarea was a port, and this meant the border of Eretz Yisrael vis-a-vis Rome. So when the Shlomo Ibn Gabirol says Vashem Vul HaKarmel VaBashan, he's speaking about the restoration of the borders, both from the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash time and the second Beit HaMikdash time, that Eretz Yisrael should be restored to its original borders in the northeast, in the Bashan, in the west, in the seashore near the Mount Carmel. The Ayin Pekach, the Nakam Kach, we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if we can't do it, he should do it for us and take that revenge. From whom? May Etzer Umidishan. This is very cryptic, Esha, Etzer, and Dishan. Except if you remember Parshat Vayishlach, the very, very last section of Parshat Vayishlach, the Torah talks about the Alufei Esav, the families and the progeny of Esav. And two of the families are the Aluf Eitzer and Aluf Dishan. And here Ibn Gabirol is saying, the Babylonians were Esav, the Romans were Esav, they're all Esav, almost in the spirit of what the Gemara says in Masechet Megillah, Hu Achashverosh, Hu Artashasta, Hu Daryavesh, they're all the same thing. Historically, there were three different kings, but their policies were the same. You know, they're all the same. You know, the person changes in the throne or in the presidency, but it's the same thing. Hu Achashverosh, Hu Daryavesh, Hu Artashasta. So here, Ibn Gabirol says, he was Esav, and he was Esav, and really, that's what the Torah says. Ela lufei Esav, they're all Esav. But there's a difference between the Esav of Babel and the Esav of Rome. Because what happened with Babel is very interesting. What was their policy when they took over a neighboring country as their empire was expanding? So the forerunners of Babel were Aram, the Galut, Ashur, the Assyrians. And the Assyrians' policy was displacement of populations. And that we know not only from our Jewish history, we know it from world history. And how it applied to Am Yisrael, when they took over in Eretz Yisrael, they took the northern kingdom, the 10 tribes, and they moved them east. And that's where there was the Galut Aseret HaShvatim. But at the same token, they took Gentiles from the east and moved them west into the area of Shomron. And they became the Shomronim, with a whole history of identifying with some Judaic ideas and believing in God. Because that's the way they saw it. They saw that God was regional, and therefore, if a Kadosh Baruch Hu is here, they have to follow a Kadosh Baruch Hu to some level. So they became the Samaritans, the Shomronim. But there was that's a very, very cruel way of dealing things, creating a whole turmoil, social turmoil of refugees. And the reason that the Assyrians did this, because they figured this is the way to control the people. When people are refugees, they're not going to have time or mindset to perhaps prepare a revolution against the central authority. Babylonians were more benevolent. That happens to be true, much more benevolent. And they believed that when they took over a country, they would keep the local power intact so that on the local level, business remained as usual. And we know the Babylonians were already in Eretz Yisrael 18 years before the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. It was the fourth year of Jehoiakim. And the Babylonians let this Jehoiakim continue. He's still the Melech Yudah, and people treated him as such and so on. So he, the king, had to pay big taxes, heavy taxes, to the Babylonians for protection. But at least on the local level, he was still the Baal HaBayit. He was still the boss. And after seven more years, and he dies, and they bring the next king is Yechoniah. At this point, there was some thinking that the intelligentsia, as we say, the leadership, the nobility, the those who could possibly plan revolution, there was something stirring up, and the Babylonians decided to displace that level, that strata of society, and that's known as Galut Yechoniah. We know all about it from Megillat Esther. Ish Yehudi haya b'Shushan habira, u'shmo Mordechai, ben Yair, ben Shemi, ben Kish, asher agla mirushalayim, asher agla im agula shehagletayim, Yechoniah melech Yudah. Mordechai goes down to Babel in that exile of Galut Yechoniah. But then there's a Melech Tzidkiyahu, and he goes on to reign another 11 years as a local monarch until the Churban, until the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. And even with the destruction of Beit HaMikdash, the Babylonians thought they had a fighting chance of maintaining law and order with a local Jewish governor. And that was the appointment of Gedaliah ben Achikam. And when after 2 months he was assassinated, and the Babylonians realized that the Jews cannot run their own affairs, that's when the Galut kicked in, finally. And that's why there's some Gedaliah. So the Babylonians, they took over, and they allowed for the local government to continue. But there was a price. Price was, and you have this issue today in modern day warfare when soldiers go out and fight, the supplies, you have to feed the soldiers, lodging, and so on. The price that the local population had to pay was they had to give entry to the Babylonian soldiers that they can sleep there and they had to be fed. That was it. Now that means a sizable part of the prosperity of the country and privacy of the country was being forfeited to the Babylonians. Now, that's worth a lot of money. When you tally up how much food and how much lodging was offered by force, of course, by coercion, to to the Babylonian army. But this was known as Etzer. Etzer means treasure, from the word otzar. It means treasure. So the damages that the Babylonians did was basically damage that had to do with forcing the Jewish treasures and belongings to be given over to the Babylonians, while the Romans, they were busy burning things. Today, when archaeologists dig, and they know they're down to the Roman era, they look for charred material, like in the burnt house in the old city. You find charred remnants, you know you've hit Rome. They are the Dishan. Dishan, we know from Trumat HaDeshen, it means ashes. So there was the Aluf Esav, who was Etzer, and there was Aluf Esav, who was Dishan. Two different types, two different styles. And we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to judge each one. Shvot Ilaim. Ilaim is a mute, because who are we to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do justice? As if, what, we didn't deserve the Churban? We deserve the destruction. And we're coming to HaKadosh Baruch Hu silently. And in the Mishlei it says, Tach picha li'ilaim, that if the Ilaim cannot plead his case, so somebody's got to open his mouth and plead the case on his behalf. And Ibn Gabirol is pleading the case. And the case is V'az Yishalem, and then he shall pay. Straight out of Parashat Mishpatim, in a litigation of monetary. We've got a bill. We're going to give a bill to the Babylonians and to the Romans for two different things. Hamav'eh v'hamav'ir. He's sitting in Parashat Mishpatim in the four main categories of damage. There's shor, an ox gores, bor, a pit, which means that an obstacle in the public domain, mav'eh and hev'er. Mav'eh, we're not sure what it means. Hev'er means fire. Fire does damage. Kitetzei esh u'matzah kotzim. So the Talmud Yerushalmi tells us that mav'eh means an ox that doesn't gore just to do damage, but simply trespasses in the neighboring field, and by doing that, ruins some of the crops and eats some of the crops, which is known as shen v'regel. Those are the two items of damage that a person would have to pay if his ox went into the neighboring field and ruined the crops because the animal ate, nibbled as food, and trampled, and so on. Who gave him permission to walk into my field? You, the owner of the ox, should have watched him. But here, what Ibn Gabirol is doing is using a definition of mav'eh from the Talmud Yerushalmi, and he's saying this is precisely what the Babylonians were guilty of. Mav'eh, shen v'regel. They insisted that Am Yisrael feed them, and they insisted that the Babylonian troops would allow to have drisat regel, entry into their house without the permission. Mav'eh. And hev'er, mav'ir is fire. That was the Romans. That was the Dishan. And hence the indictment against the Babylonians and against the Romans were two different indictments, because it were two different matters that were at stake over here. Completely two different matters. Yom gavar ho'oyev v'tibaka ha'ir. It may have been the Babylonians and the Romans on the 17th of Tammuz. But at the end of days, when we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to rectify the situation, v'nei beit zvul v'ashev gvul, HaKarmel v'habashan, the borders that were trespassed by the Romans and the Babylonians, and he should take revenge on our part from the Esavs of the east and the west, the Etzer and the Dishans, Az Yishalem, Am Yisrael deserves payment for this, for the Mav'eh and the Mav'ir, Yom Gavar Ho'oyev v'tibaka ha'ir. And to this end, we do hope and trust that we'll be very short time that we will be able to replace the Tzom HaRavi'i and the Tzom HaChamishi and Tzom HaShvi'i and Tzom HaAsiri. These fast days will indeed become, in the words of Zechariah, Yamim Tovim, Yimei Sason V'Simcha, and should be great days for Am Yisrael. Shalom.